Good morning. Welcome to the Morning Show with Community News and Affairs from the Center. I'm Ron Fruitt. It is a real privilege for us today to be able to welcome Conservation Wardens Cody Adams and Mike Williams. It's an incredibly busy time for Cody and Mike and their counterparts across the state of Wisconsin as we get ready for the gun deer season. So to have them take an hour out of their day and be our guest today and answer your questions is indeed a privilege. Cody serves the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources as a warden for Crawford County and Mike for Richland County. Gentlemen, it's good to have both of you here today, and can't say enough. I just hope, Cody, it's a safe and a successful season for you as wardens and for everyone who will head to the field, and we hope that's a lot of people this weekend, don't we?
We do, yeah. Historically, we typically look at around 600,000 license sales for the opening weekend of the gun deer season. That's a lot of people in the woods. And, safety is ultimately the number one concern, and making sure that in the grand scheme of things that people make it home at the end of the day and the end of the season is our number one concern, and making sure that people are being safe out there.
Am I right in saying that the vast majority of regulations in the rule book are geared towards safety?
They are, yeah. Majority of them are there just to make sure that people are being safe out there. And there's a lot of different rules out there, and I definitely recommend it, to every hunter, just to pick up the regulations and page through them, and because I promise they're gonna see something that they forgot about or learn something. I know every warden in the state, we read them front to back before the 9-day gun deer season, and there's often a lot of things that we forget about, so definitely a good piece of advice.
Mike, it's sure nice to have you here today. Thank you for joining us. If you had to make a projection on what this season is going to look like, hunter success and, all the other aspects from corn in the field to whatever it might be, what makes you optimistic and what concerns you, Mike?
Well, I think that one of the main things that's going to be beneficial to the hunters is obviously the snow that's on the ground here. It's going to make those deer more visible. It's certainly going to help with the success and the numbers of deer that are harvested, I would think. I noticed that some of the corn's starting to come off, so that'll get the deer in the woods, and hopefully some of the hunters will see some more deer this year. So I, just kind of a vague prediction that people will be successful this year. I know the numbers were down last year a little bit from the year before, but hopefully that'll kind of bounce back this year.
It's interesting how one hunter can say, saw lots of deer, and the next hunter says, I didn't see any. I mean, it's pretty difficult to predict, isn't it?
It is. And that kind of goes back to the basic needs of the deer. You kind of look at kind of what humans need as well, just food, water, shelter. If the deer have food, they're going to be in that area. If they got cover, they're going to be in that area. So that kind of applies too. That's why we see different numbers of deer in certain parts of the county versus other parts of the county. But overall, there's a lot of deer in the county.
What would you say, Cody, as you look forward to this season? What makes you optimistic, or what concerns you, or both?
Well, like what Mike touched on, this year it's been a dry fall, so a lot of the corn has been out. And, fortunately for the farmers, they've been able to harvest a lot of the corn. That takes away a lot of hiding places for the deer. So that's obviously a good thing. Driving here from the basketball area this morning, a lot of I'd say about 50% of the hillsides are covered in snow, and that's definitely going to be beneficial. Again, with that snow, people need to be just a little bit cautious getting in and out of the tree stands, just with the conditions and being slippery and things like that. But I think overall, it's going to be chilly. It's been a few years since we've seen those temperatures in the single digits. But I think how people hunt, has significantly changed over the last 10, 20 years. We don't see as many deer drives anymore, where people have the big warm shacks with the heaters inside and they sit all day long. So I think a lot of people will be able to bear those cold conditions, depending on how they hunt. But overall, I think it'll be a good season, and I'm optimistic for the hunters.
It's interesting when the leaves go off. It's amazing how many deer stands and tree stands there are throughout this area.
It sure is, yeah. And how many of them, are sold all throughout the areas. There's a lot of them that go up, and it definitely makes it easier and more comfortable for the hunters out there, that's for sure.
If you could do one thing, Mike, to ensure the safety of hunters, what would that one emphasis be from you as a conservation warden in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, there's a few things, but I think first and foremost, and I know they stress this a ton at hunter safety because I help out with the laws portion when the hunter safety classes take place, but just remember the basic rules of firearm safety, and that's tab K. You know, treat every firearm as if they're loaded. Always point your muzzle in a safe direction. Be sure of your target and what's beyond, and then keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. If you follow those basic firearm rules, you know, then hopefully Cody and I, you know, we won't have to respond to a hunting-related incident, and hopefully these people that are out hunting are able to go home safely to their family after having an enjoyable hunt. The other thing I always recommend is, you know, if you're out there, if you're hunting, just like anything else, prepare in advance. I have a go bag that I carry with me. You know, it's got a few basic things, for some first aid stuff, you know, some hand warmers. I even threw a tourniquet in there just in case something happens. You know, you can always plan ahead, and hopefully that can help you out if you need it.
There are a few programs that rival the success, in my mind, of hunter safety. That's been remarkably successful and effective, hasn't it?
It has. Actually, there's a slide that I show on one of my presentations where there's a report. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was taken from like 1908 where they recorded several fatalities throughout that hunting season. And then it equates back to, I think when I put that in there, it was like 2017, and I don't think there were any fatalities. So hunter safety has definitely made an impact and kept people safe, just with some of the main changes when those took place as far as blaze orange and fluorescent pink now. Those make a huge difference because the hunters are visible and they're less likely to be shot.
You're also hoping, aren't you, Cody, that these types of classes and other things will encourage young people to continue the hunting tradition here in the state of Wisconsin?
Absolutely. You know, that's definitely something that we see declining is the number of youth hunters in the woods. So, you know, we try to remind families to keep it fun out there for the kids. You know, don't put a whole lot of extra unnecessary pressure on the kids that they have to harvest, you know, an animal in order for it to be a successful hunt. You know, there's a lot of memories that I have as a youth, thinking about, you know, just everything that comes to the preparation of the deer season and the camaraderie with friends and families. And those are memories that I'll cherish forever. So keep it fun for the kids. And if you have the opportunity, we definitely try to recommend people to introduce, you know, hunting to somebody that might not have that opportunity.
But from those who are involved with deer management and so forth, having a number of hunters on the landscape is important to them too, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's important to keep those deer numbers in check. You know, obviously for all the vehicle car crashes this time of the year, there's numerous that happen every year. And, you know, it's important to, you know, our biologists do a good job in recording and keeping track of the number and the deer population in the state. But absolutely, hunting plays a very important role in keeping those numbers in check.
We're all thinking about deer hunting right now, but we should be thinking about it when the CDAC meetings come up too, shouldn't we?
It is, yeah. That, you know, they're important. Wisconsin is fortunate where we kind of manage the deer population at a county level, where some counties, they want to reduce the population, some counties want to maintain the population, and that really regulates how many antlerless tags are going to be available every year. And it's important that the public, you know, if they get involved in these meetings, and so they can have a say in how to manage the deer herd countywide.
If we talked about changes this year, we wouldn't have a whole lot to talk about, would we, Mike?
No, there's really no changes regarding deer hunting for that matter. But there's just a couple real small changes for I think, waterfowl and then the extended squirrel season. I think that goes to the end of February now. But otherwise, there's really no changes. And these rules and regulations for gun deer season have been in place for a few years now. So we're fortunate. That makes Cody and I our job a lot easier. So we're thankful for that.
But it doesn't mean I shouldn't go back and review the rules, like Cody said. Even if something hasn't changed, my memory may have.
That's correct. And the other thing that I add, too, some of these younger kids that have just went through hunter safety, you know, that's a good reminder. Just those kids kind of can remind some of the adults, or if the adults attend the class with them, you know, that kind of serves as a refresher as well for some of the adults.
Well, it seems the biggest piece of information that we talk about now is CWD. Is it a common question you as a warden get, Mike?
It is, Ron. We have several questions throughout the year about that. And this time of the year, I don't know about Cody. I can't speak for him. But this time of the year, I've had several people calling me over the last few weeks because the hunters are out getting their stands ready, and they're finding some of these deer that have died in the woods, possibly of CWD. And I'm getting a lot of calls, so they're kind of concerned. Some of the original scare, I think, is kind of went by the wayside, just because it's been around since, I think, 2002. I can't remember the exact year, but early 2000s when CWD was first found here in Wisconsin. So,
20 years, but it remains a key issue, and the whole aspect of testing is encouraged heavily, isn't it?
It is, very much so. Our wildlife biologists have been encouraging that, and they still continue to encourage people to get their deer tested, and that kind of helps them understand if the disease is spreading, you know, if it's remaining the same, if it's getting better. So yeah, continue to test your deer. I know they want us to kind of stress that, to continue to test it. And there's several places throughout the county that you can get those deer tested at.
Well, we had the CDAC members on, and we talked about the archery club's commitment, but it's free, so you really want hunters to take advantage, don't you?
Absolutely. And they position them throughout the county in locations where you can get them tested fairly easy. So, I mean, there's five, and I can cover those real quick here. The five locations that are in Richland County are the Boaz Country Store, Dern's Farm, which is just south of Cazenovia. Ithaca has a deer dumpster. And then here in Richland Center, there's a dumpster over by the treatment plant. And then Natural Bridge Store, which they'll actually help you in Rockbridge, which they'll actually help you cut the lymph nodes out. So.
And those have been very standard locations now for the last few years, haven't they?
They have. So most of the hunters should know where they're at and should be able to access them fairly easy.
Certainly thinking about responsible management of a deer carcass, that's a great follow-up question to CWD, isn't it, Cody?
It is, yeah. You know, it's the hunter's responsibility to make sure that we're not, you know, after we harvest our animals, after we clean those animals, and to make sure that we're throwing those carcasses and the bones in respectable places and not throwing them all across the landscapes. And we have a lot of different businesses. We even have individuals who are donating deer dumpsters throughout the state to make sure that these carcasses are going in the appropriate places. The DNR website has a phenomenal tool. If you go onto the DNR's website and you search deer disposal, a state map will come up, and you can see where all of these dumpster locations are. Pretty much they're in the same places they have been, you know, in the last 2 or 3 years. But again, we remind people to please be respectful to these dumpsters and not throw your trash. Don't throw couches, don't throw TVs and things that don't belong in them, because it's specifically for, you know, deer parts and things like that.
Well, and I know when I've had some other guests on who've sponsored those dumpsters, please don't put a deer with its head in there. Take the time to remove the head and get it tested.
That's right. Correct. Absolutely.
But when you're field dressing a deer, is it okay to leave that material on the landscape then where the deer was harvested, Cody? Is that responsible?
It is, yeah. And that's pretty typical that people, you know, the deer's harvested, they field dressed it. You know, the major problem with the CWD and the parts of the deer that contain the CWD is the lymph nodes and in the spinal column and things like that. So that's why we want to make sure that those parts of the deer aren't scattered throughout the state, you know, to help prevent the spread of the CWD. And that's part of the importance of those dumpster locations.
And I know the DNR website stresses the fact that you can't cook CWD out of the meat. It's there if it's there, isn't it?
Correct, yeah. It's in different parts of the body for sure. And yeah, it's definitely recommended if you have a positive deer that you don't eat that meat. There's never been any proof that it's actually injured a person, but again, it's highly recommended that if it is positive for CWD, not to eat that deer. And there is definitely some incentive that people are starting to realize that if their deer comes back positive, you know, that they will get an additional, either if it's an antlerless deer, if that tested positive, they'll get an additional antlerless tag, or if it's a buck, They'll get an additional buck tag that can be used the year that you harvested the deer, or it'll be can be used for the following year. So, you know, that's the reason we do have a handful of people. You know, they might have two buck tags for next year for the archery season or the gun season because they had a buck that tested positive for CWD.
What triggers that? Do I have to apply for it, or when I send in my test, does that automatically leave me eligible for that extra license?
So good question. It's a super easy process now for hunters. When I test my deer, I fill out some paperwork, and I can check my Go Wild account right online where all of my licenses are, and it'll tell me my test results on there. And then if it comes back positive, then you will have that additional tag that'll show up in your Go Wild account, which will be, again, valid for either if I tested it this year, it'll be valid for this year or for next year. So right on Go Wild, all that information can be found, and I can look to see if that deer tested positive or negative in my Go Wild account.
Is the extra license or permit then weapon specific? So if I get my deer during the gun season, is that only good during gun season, or if I'm an archer and a firearm
hunter? So that's an additional thing. Is typically no, they're not. So it's an additional buck tag. You know, that gives an opportunity to harvest an additional buck next year also.
Sounds good. What are those, you know, let's say that I get a buck and there are some very nice looking ones, you know, testing, do I lose opportunities at taxidermy or saving the rack or whatever it might be?
So another good question, and no, there's a lot of taxidermists that work with the DNR, and they can actually remove the lymph nodes so that if you still want to get the deer mounted, you have that opportunity. The main thing you can is just the meat. We don't recommend that people eat the meat. So you still have the opportunity if you want to mount the antlers. You still have that opportunity.
What do you recommend, Cody? That people just freeze that, or maybe they field dress and quarter it up. You know, what do most hunters do, and what do you find from them works well?
Well, the typical turnaround time during the gun deer season, I would say, is about 2 weeks. So a lot of people, they'll bone their meat out, and they'll keep it separated from other deer so they know what deer is which, and wait until those test results come back. You know, depending on the temperatures outside, some people, they like to age their deer. They like to let them hang a little bit. But the main thing is, I would say, just to keep those deer separated so they know which deer is which when those test results come back.
And I know Craig at the Richland Locker is saying with the cold temperatures this weekend, if you're going to bring it to the locker, it'd be better not to let it freeze outside before you bring it in.
Yeah, I think it's definitely appreciated by them if they don't have a block of ice that comes in.
But then when my test result comes back, if it is positive and I follow the DNR's recommendations, I then can take that meat and put it in one of the dumpsters, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Let's talk about licenses if we can a little bit, Mike. I guess over the years that changed. You had, in the past you had to have your license before the season started and so forth, but a lot of that has changed over the last few years, hasn't it?
Correct, it has, Ron. And I think part of that is just trying to get more hunters out on the landscape. Sometimes we live in a busy time, and people get so busy in the everyday hustle and bustle that they're not sure if they can even go hunting. So then halfway through the season, or after the season has opened and started, you know, they decide that they got a little bit of free time and they'd like to get out in the woods, and that gives them an extra opportunity.
So is the easiest way to buy a license online? You know, are there vendors that have the licenses still, Mike?
Sure. Yeah, online's always an option. That's pretty easy for most people. They've become, you know, fairly comfortable with using the internet and purchasing things online. But there are other options too. I know any of the Go Wild licensed vendors that have Go Wild, you can go there and purchase them. I know Walmart has one, and there's other locations throughout the county that you can buy a hunting license as well.
Let's spend a few minutes talking about registration. That's an important process of a successful hunt.
It is, for sure. Our wildlife biologists, they kind of use that to determine, you know, whether the kill is up or down, and kind of gauge, you know, how our deer herd's doing. So as far as registration goes, if you harvest a deer, you're required by law to register that deer by 5 p.m. on the day after recovery. So that's one of the main things. And sometimes people forget. And it's our job to kind of go out there and enforce that. But if we can get the message out there to remind them, whether they got to set a reminder in their phone or write something at their camp on their fridge or wherever they need to do it as a reminder, if they harvest a deer, to remember to do that by 5 p.m. on the day after recovery.
My guess is some do it right in the field as soon as they get to the deer.
They do, especially nowadays with technology, and most people have cell phones right at their fingertips. You know, they carry them with them pretty much everywhere they go, and you can just call that number and do it in the field. So it makes it very easy.
Are there rules about transporting a deer that you as a conservation warden have to keep your eyes open for, Mike?
We do, and part of that's because of where we're at. We're in a CWD-affected area. So some restrictions go as far as transporting deer. And one of the restrictions that we have is that if you're transporting, let's say you live outside of the county, you can only transport that deer outside of a county or the adjacent county where CWD is found to a licensed taxidermist or a licensed meat processor, and that has to be done within 72 hours. So that's one of the main things. We don't want people transporting deer from a CWD affected area to areas where it's not at, and then having that spread throughout the county or throughout the state.
So let's give an example. I'm hunting in Richland County. How far could I go then, Mike?
A lot of the areas or surrounding counties around Richland are CWD areas as well. So you'd be able to obviously transport them to those counties. It's where we have counties where CWD has not been found or not an issue that the restrictions kind of come in place.
So I need to know where I'm hunting, what the circumstances are, where I'm going, and have that strategy in mind before the hunt even starts.
That's correct. Otherwise, if you have that deer deboned and packaged, then you can transport or transfer the meat as long as it's packaged.
Well, why don't we take a break? When we come back, we'll open our phone line. So if there's a question you'd like to be able to ask Mike Williams and Cody Adams on the program today, you can do so. We have other things to be able to talk about as well. And we wish all of you the very best as you head out to the field tomorrow for the opening of Wisconsin's 9-day gun deer season. And we'll return with more of the morning show in just a moment. Welcome back to the morning show. News from the center today, getting you ready for the 2022 gun deer season here in the state of Wisconsin. Conservation Wardens Cody Adams and Mike Williams are our guests on the program today. And we'll be happy to take your question if there's something specific that you're wondering about. 647-4155. Phil is ready to answer the phone this morning. 608-647-4155. We'll do our best to answer as many questions as we possibly can. Let's talk a little bit about baiting and feeding. Cody, I'll let you tackle that one. Is that a common question that you as a conservation warden here in the state of Wisconsin get?
It is, yes. So any county that has CWD or adjacent counties, they have a baiting ban. And in this part of the state, we have not been allowed to bait deer or feed deer for, like Mike said, all the way back till 2001. So yeah, I want to remind hunters, we cannot be, putting any corn out, putting any apples out, salt blocks, mineral blocks, all those things are going to be prohibited. Now that I can hunt in a food plot if I grow it, that's a normal agricultural practice, and then I can hunt in those areas, but I just can't bring those items out and put them next to my deer stand and hunt over those. That would be illegal. So we have a handful of complaints and questions about that every year. And we make sure that we're not doing those things. You know, they sell all sorts of different types of bait and mineral and feed, in different stores around the area. And they can sell it, but here in this part of the state, we can't use it.
That makes me think, if I do see something that I believe is wrong, if I see an infraction, we can really be your eyes and ears, can't we?
Absolutely. And that, I can't stress the importance in that. We're kind of the referees in the hunting world, and, people spend a lot of time and a lot of money in hunting, and it's absolutely important for the public, if they see something, if they hear something, to give us a call. We have the DNR hotline, the 1-800-TIP-WDNR. Almost everybody has a cell phone in their pocket. A picture's worth 1,000 words, so if they hear about something, don't necessarily contact the people. You know, we would rather do that, especially when you have individuals carrying firearms in the woods, and we don't want any confrontations in the woods. But a picture can go a long ways if you see something going on, and we'll certainly respond to those situations.
Mike, one of the things we talked about during the break was, you know, some of the issues that come up with trespassing and other issues, and that's our first listener question today. A landowner wonders, how do I deal with trespassing, particularly in a time when back tags are no longer a part of the hunt?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, just to clarify, the Sheriff's Department actually handles general trespass. So if you have a trespass-related issue, contact the Sheriff's Department, which would be 608-647-2106, and let them know. But the other thing is just try and get as much information as you can about that particular person. If you know who they are, great. Otherwise, try and identify, you know, what they're wearing, what type of pants. Obviously, they're going to have blaze orange or fluorescent pink if they're following the rules and regulations as far as clothing requirements. But if they have a vehicle, one of the main things that certainly help any law enforcement is a license plate, because then we're able to run that license plate and find out who that belongs to, who that vehicle belongs to, and that's at least somewhere to start. But yeah, just get as much, like Cody said, for safety purposes, don't contact that person. Take a picture. Do whatever you can. The other thing, when you do take pictures, a lot of the cell phones have the GPS coordinates and the details when that picture was taken, what time of day, you know, that helps us kind of narrow down where that location is at.
As far as trespassing is concerned, maybe we can talk about public versus private lands, Mike. If I'm a landowner, do I have to have no trespassing signs up? Or is it a given that if it's private land, that you need to have permission before entering and hunting?
That's kind of a given. I think here in Wisconsin, I mean, everyone, you don't have to have your land posted. It's up to the hunter to know where they're hunting at and where the boundaries are so that they're not trespassing. So that kind of falls on them. That's their burden to carry. You know, you make sure you, and we always say this, you know, plan your hunt and hunt your plan. So if you're out and you're scoping out the areas and doing all your research and your work ahead of time, then you shouldn't run into these problems of trespassing and other issues.
And that's where the relationships that you guys have talked about for so many years, Mike, have a relationship with the landowner that started weeks or months ago leading up to the hunt that starts tomorrow.
Absolutely. You know, talk to these people. Have these agreements or arrangements worked out with your neighbors. You know, if you shoot a deer and it runs onto their property, contact them in advance before the season even starts and make sure that you guys understand where each other are coming from so that they can come onto your property if they shoot a deer, or you can go onto their property, or if they don't want you to, then you don't get to. So I've ran into situations like that in the past where someone shot a deer, it ran onto the other person's property. They didn't want them to come over and get that deer or register that deer. And so what's happened, whenever there's a conflict like that, I try not to let the meat go to waste if it's good. And what I'll do is I'll kind of go in there and I'll talk with the landowner. Obviously, they have that ability to say, no, I don't even want you on that property, you know, that we're going to leave that. But I hate to see it go to waste. So what I've tried to do is title that deer to the state and then donate it to someone that wants it. Usually before the season starts out, we'll get a list of people that have asked, hey, if you come across a deer and nobody wants it, could you please keep me in mind? And then that way that deer doesn't go to waste.
But just because I harvested the deer, I have no right to go on another person's property to retrieve it if I haven't had prior permission or don't get permission.
That is correct. It'd still be considered trespassing, and we want to avoid that. This is one of those times a year during gun deer season where feelings get hurt, relationships get ruined if you don't plan that in advance.
Thinking about that, the deer donation program is still alive and well, isn't it, Cody?
It is, yeah. We looking at some of the statistics, it's amazing. Since 2000, that's when that program first started, we've had over 94,000 deer donated to the deer donation program. That's over 3.8 million pounds of ground venison, which has been donated. So it's a phenomenal program. We have a few lockers in the area that are participating in the deer donation. In Crawford County, the Eastman Locker is participating. In Grant County, the Fenimore Butcher Shop is participating. couple caveats to that program is that hunters, they do have to get their deer tested before dropping off the deer. And make sure to call the lockers ahead of time to make sure they're still taking in, because a lot of these lockers will only take in X amount of deer for this program. But yeah, if you're a family that doesn't eat venison, but your family likes to hunt, this is definitely an excellent program to make sure that meat is getting utilized.
Next question, how do I find public lands and what are my opportunities on public lands, Cody?
Sure. So there's all sorts of different mapping softwares now which are available to the public. The DNR website, if you go on the DNR's website and you just search public land maps, there's a phenomenal mapping software program that's on the DNR's website that shows all the public lands in green that people can go in and hunt on those properties. A lot of people utilize Onyx Maps, you know, different softwares on their apps on their cell phones to make sure that they're on public lands and that they have the opportunity to hunt these different properties. But there's a lot of public lands out there. Again, you know, it's our, like Mike spoke about, it's our responsibility as a hunter to know where you're at. Even landowners, they don't have to have fences. So it's important that people know where they're at, and like Mike spoke about, if a deer happens to run on the neighbor's property when you're hunting, you got to talk to those landowners before you go and retrieve that animal.
I think, Mike, you answered this question, but it certainly can be asked this way in a little different variety. Listener wonders, can I get a license after the season starts?
Sure, absolutely. Like I spoke of before, you can go in. That changed in years past. It was quite some time ago. You used to have to buy like your archery license 3 days in advance before you could actually hunt under that. That has since changed, and now you can buy it right before you go out if you want.
Our next listener wonders, what are the rules concerning hunting from a UTV or an ATV?
So if you're hunting... if you're hunting from an ATV or a UTV, it's illegal unless you have a disabled permit, which would be, there's a form you got to fill out and you have to have your doctor sign off on that. Then it has to be approved by the department if you're going to try and do that. Otherwise, if you're in a UTV or ATV, your gun has to be unloaded. They no longer have to be cased, even though we highly recommend that those guns still be cased for safety purposes. And then not only that, a lot of these guns are quite expensive. So just for protection of your gun or your investment. But if you're in an ATV and UTV, unless you have certain circumstances where you have that disabled permit, your guns have to be unloaded, so you wouldn't be able to hunt from them.
Is there some advice that you would give for hunters who are disabled on how they handle things and what they do?
Just once again, make sure you go over those regulations. Do it in advance, just like we were talking about other features of the hunting season. Make sure you plan well in advance. Set an appointment up with your doctor. Get everything approved. Contact your local warden if you have interest and you want to know of hunting opportunities in the area that might be accessible and easy to get at with your disability. Reach out to, that's why we're here. We're here to help out if we can. But yeah, certainly plan that in advance and get everything taken care of and read over the restrictions and regulations. And if you have any questions about whether you have to be legally parked, if the vehicle can be in motion, all those will be covered and we can answer those for you.
Another listener wonders, Cody, are there any food pantries that take venison?
I don't believe in this immediate area. A lot, the deer donation programs, typically the locker plants, they then distribute that to the food pantries, and there's specific handling and packaging restrictions that they have to have. So a lot of times the process is from the locker to the food pantries. And I don't believe that they take in the venison just from the general public.
So if we really want to make a difference, we need to get into the deer donation program and follow that protocol.
Correct, yeah. And again, the CWD testing is important, and they have the correct procedure in place to make sure, you know, that the deers have been tested before going to these food pantries. So that just kind of eliminates, you know, possibly a untested deer going to a food pantry and ensuring that they've been tested and gone through the appropriate steps with the deer donation program.
Are there differences in how the ramifications or criteria is for my deer tag if I'm hunting on public land as opposed to hunting on private land or in a particular county or area, Cody?
There are. So this is a change that we had probably 3 or 4 years ago. This portion of the state, we're in the southern farmland zone, and a buck tag, that's good statewide. So a hunter, when we buy our license, that buck tag is good anywhere in the state. But now we have to specify for our antlerless tags if they're going to be used on private land versus public land. And when we buy the licenses, we have to specify if it is going to be private or public. And then if we want to have additional, you know, let's say public land tags, we can buy those. I checked yesterday, and if hunters want those additional public land tags, I would suggest to purchase those sooner than later. For example, Crawford County, as of last night, they only had 141 antlerless public land tags left. In Richland, they had 378 public land tags. So it's important that if you want those additional tags, you get on those. But yes, we do have to. These are some of the decisions that are made in the CDAC meetings is how many tags are going to be available. So we do have to specify public versus private lands when we harvest our antlerless deer.
Now, there are other seasons, Mike, so in that case, if I purchase this tag and get it sooner and later, this is what Cody recommended, does that mean that that tag may be good then through the other seasons that will follow the gun deer season?
It does, and there's several other opportunities around throughout the year. A lot of times people just kind of think about this traditional 9-day gun deer season, but we have several other opportunities immediately following the gun deer season. We have our muzzleloader season, which goes from November 28th to December 7th. Then we have a 4-day antlerless hunt from December 8th through December 11th. That is antlerless only. Then we have a holiday hunt here in Richland County from December 24th to January 1st. That is also antlerless only. And then we have an extended archery season. So if you had an archery license earlier in the year, that goes all the way through January 31st. So there's a lot of different opportunity to harvest, whether it be antlerless or a buck during a muzzleloader season. You can still use your buck tag during a muzzleloader. But otherwise, a lot of the other opportunities like the 4-day antlerless and the hot holiday hunter antlerless only seasons.
I think about just the fact of all these different seasons. Some are weapon specific, aren't they? Like the muzzleloader season?
That is correct. Yeah, during the muzzleloader season, you would only be able to use your muzzleloader. Although the archery season runs through that as well, but you would still have to follow the blaze orange requirement for clothing if you're out trying to archery hunt during that muzzleloader season.
Crossbows continue to make a large impact, don't they?
They do. They do. And it's gotten more people on the landscape. I guess I look at it from the standpoint, like my daughter, who's 14, she was able to harvest her first deer this year with a crossbow. And otherwise, she might not have had that opportunity because she's not quite strong enough to pull a traditional compound bow back. So that gave her that added opportunity with the crossbow. And we're seeing a lot of them on the landscape. I don't know what Cody's experience is, but there's more and more people that are out there hunting with them.
I think if you talk to the lockers, they would say it's made a big difference in the early archery seasons, Cody.
It has. There's a lot of deer being harvested with the crossbows. I think, like Mike talked about, there is a lot more youth that are getting involved who may not, you know, have the opportunity to be able to hunt with a traditional compound bow. So,
you know, somebody wonders about, you know, keeping the meat separate and so forth. When you apply for testing, do you get a tag or a number so that each carcass or deboned meat can be kept separate, Cody?
You do. So when you fill that paperwork out, on the form that you fill out, that there's going to be a kind of like an authorization number on that form. And that information will, like I said, go directly into your Go Wild account so you can pull your account up and see what the testing results was of that deer.
And again, that's free of charge, the testing, correct?
It is, absolutely, yep.
Let's talk a little bit about the highly visible clothing requirement. We used to just say blaze orange, and now the department talks about highly visible clothing, which I guess is a pretty good description of the whole circumstance.
Yep, it used to just be blaze orange requirement. Now we have the opportunity for blaze pink if hunters choose that color. But yeah, that's an important one, kind of a tradition, I think, in Wisconsin. We see a lot of Blaze Orange starting, you know, a couple days ago in trucks and people driving around and wearing their Blaze Orange. But it's important hunters remember 50% of your body from the waist up is required to be Blaze Orange. And also, if you have a hat on, 50% of that hat has to be Blaze Orange or Blaze Pink. You know, again, you can buy anything in Blaze Orange. The more, the better. It's pretty unbelievable. We have some pictures we use for hunter safety. You know, there's a lot of different Blaze Orange out there. Camouflage Blaze Orange, you know, versus the straight Blaze Orange. We have some of these pictures where hunters are wearing camouflage Blaze Orange versus straight Blaze Orange, and they took a picture every 5 minutes, I think it was, at dusk, and it's unbelievable how much the straight Blaze Orange sticks out opposed to the camouflage Blaze Orange. But again, that rule is there for the safety of all of us. These firearms that people use during the gun deer season, they can go a long ways being able to identify that target and what's beyond. That's an important one, and that Blaze Orange is there to help protect us, to make sure we come home at the end of the day.
When I was a boy, I can remember Dad going out to hunt, and what he wore at that time, and others did, it was like a plaid red black check jacket. Why, you couldn't see it from...
Right.
It's
yep.
Unreal.
Yep. We still have some of those old jackets, the red ones and the plaid ones at home. So, you know, that Blaze Orange, again, or the Blaze Pink, we want to make sure that it's bright, clean Blaze Orange. You know, sometimes we see some of these jackets that have been laying around in the barn for years, and they're more of a brown color. But, again, that's an important one, that we want to make sure it's bright, clean Blaze Orange or bright Blaze Pink.
Oftentimes people ask Mike about other hunting seasons, you know, squirrel or waterfowl or whatever it might be. Are there certain rules that we should be following, you know, if we're wanting to hunt something else other than deer during the gun deer season?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. The Blaze Orange requirement still holds into effect if you're out squirrel hunting or doing something of that nature while a gun deer season is going on. The only exception to that would be waterfowl hunters. They kind of have an exception to the Blaze Orange requirement if they're out there doing it. But otherwise, any other thing that you're trying to hunt, you're required to wear that Blaze Orange during a gun deer season.
Yeah, and to that end, is there any season that closes just because the gun deer season is open? Does everything run as it typically does?
Yeah, typically that everything else is going to remain going, but everyone kind of drops what they're doing. Unless you're a diehard in a certain field, most people kind of, this is the time of the year for gun deer season, but most of those other seasons go all the way through as well. One thing to kind of to add on there, what you were talking about with the Blaze Orange, is just to remember, I just want to remind people, if you're hunting on state-owned or managed lands out of a blind, the requirement of the Blaze Orange to be on those blinds, you have to have 144 square inches visible in all directions if you're hunting out of a blind. And that goes back to what we were talking about with a safety issue too. And that could tie in with some of the other people that are out hunting that aren't gun deer hunting. You know, if you're out there hunting, make sure you have that visible if you're on state-owned or managed lands.
If I'm a farmer with agricultural crops, do I have any privileges or special exemptions as far as hunting is concerned, Mike?
No, to my knowledge, and Cody and I kind of talked about this before, there are no exceptions anymore. You're still required to, if you're out harvesting corn and you're in a tractor, you still have to have your gun unloaded. If you're going to be hunting, you still have to have your Blaze Orange. The seasons still apply. We used to have a landowner season specifically for landowners, but that's no longer the case.
But I know there are landowners who, you know, are farmers who have relationships with hunters, hoping that they can help them control the deer on their property.
They do, yeah, and that's kind of a win-win when you can work things out and you're a farmer and you don't hunt yourself, but yet you want to try and decrease the number of deer that are on your property. There are certain situations where some of these farmers may be able to get ag tags, which would be issued by our wildlife biologist. I know there's a few in the area that Savannah Hartman, our wildlife biologist, have worked with and issued some of those agricultural tags or permits or harvest authorizations. But yeah, if you can work that out and you're a farmer and you have people, usually there's no shortage of people looking for hunting property. So if you you can do that once again in advance of the season, so you have it all planned out, that's the best case scenario.
Next listener, Cody, wonders what the biologists believe we're at as far as deer numbers are concerned. Are they strong? Are they where they've been? Any idea?
I think every year they're optimistic. You know, it's been a couple years where we had a EHD outbreak, and Crawford County was kind of the ground zero for that. And there was a number of deer that we lost due to EHD. Again, it's the wrong time of year for EHD. I get numerous phone calls this time of year where people think that they may have a deer on their property that has died from EHD, but typically once we have a frost, that's not the case. So I think our numbers are starting to bounce back a little bit from when we had that go through the landscape. Again, CWD, we are losing a handful of deer a year to that, but I know talking, you know, just out on patrol, talking with bow hunters, that people are seeing a lot of deer out there. Again, like Mike, what he touched on with how things vary so much from property to property. And again, that's an important reason for the CDEC meetings, is because we are managing the deer, you know, private specific antlerless tags, the number versus the public specific antlerless tags. But I think the biologists are optimistic that our deer numbers are in a positive light this year, and that hopefully hunters have some success out there this year.
Sometimes in past years, we've talked about very warm weather where the rut was delayed and deer weren't moving and so forth. You know, what are you expecting this year in that regard, Cody?
Well, speaking with hunters, I think we're right around where we should be. You know, with the temperatures that we've had, I think the deer are moving pretty good. And there's been a lot of success during the archery season, especially the last week or two when we've had these cooler temperatures. You know, hopefully with these storms pass and the deer are going to be up on their feet. But I think we're right where we should be when it comes to the rut and talking to the biologists and talking to, you know, the hunters that are out hunting. That I'm optimistic that we're right where we should be.
Boy, I've noticed some beautiful animals on social media. Unbelievable.
It's amazing, you know, the size of deer that we have now compared to 30 years ago, and if you just seen a buck, it was... It was a good hunt. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's amazing how things have changed.
Well, final word this morning. Mike, let me begin with you. Is there something you'd like to reemphasize or revisit or something that we haven't talked about that we should?
I would just say safety, first and foremost, just kind of like what we've been talking about throughout the morning show this morning. Just be safe. Spend that time with your family. Enjoy it. That's one of the things that's most memorable for me. I think about my childhood when I first started hunting and just getting to visit with my cousins. They'd come up and do all that. And if that safety aspect, if something happens, then that pretty much can ruin your whole deer season. And we don't want that as wardens, and you don't want that as a hunter. So I can't stress safety enough. Just make sure that you're following the four rules of firearm safety, wear your blaze orange, just be conscious of where your muzzle's pointed, all those things. Get out there and enjoy it. You know, kind of get that mental break, enjoy the outdoors, spend time with your family, and get a little exercise and some fresh air and enjoy it.
No one wants a citation, but I'm guessing you don't want to write one either.
That's correct. I always tell people there's three main parts of our job. That's education, enforcement, and community involvement. And I feel that if we're out there educating the public like we are today, if they have questions, or active in our community, then we can avoid the enforcement portion of it. I think I can speak for Cody. Like, we can accomplish our job, hopefully, without writing citations. And that's what we want to do. We want to keep people safe, and we want to keep it fair. We're, like Cody said earlier, we're kind of like the referees, try and keep things fair for the wildlife and keep hunters safe.
And you want participation.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, without people out hunting and fishing and doing that sort of stuff, Cody and I'd be out of a job. So we want the people out there for sure.
So. Final word you'd like to share this morning, Cody?
I think it's important that hunters think about how we measure success when we're out hunting. And like Mike said, it doesn't always necessarily have to be the harvest of an animal, because those memories that we make are something hopefully that people cherish forever. And also, I think it's very important that we touched on a little bit, but to have a plan Make sure you're letting others know where you're going to be hunting, when you're going to be returning. That way, if something does happen, that somebody knows where you're at and where you're going to be. And have an enjoyable deer season.
A hunter who is unable to hunt because of health issues asks a question. This will be our final one this morning. They're wondering, is there a way they can get in touch, or is there a list where they could be paired with someone who doesn't want a deer, who is a hunter? Does that make sense, Cody?
It does. I would recommend to contact your local warden, you know, if that might be Mike or I. You know, the DNR hotline number, they can give those cell phone numbers out, the 1-800-TIP-WDNR or the DNR information number, 1-888-WDNR-INFO. And also a lot of the local sheriff's departments, they also have lists for if there's a fresh car deer that they're available to hand those deer out or let people know where those deer are at so that that venison gets utilized.
Well, there are some hunters that have a number of tags who undoubtedly might be able to accommodate a request.
Absolutely,
like this.
Yep.
So, well, thanks to both of you for coming. Best wishes for a safe and a successful hunt. And looks like it's going to be cold tomorrow, but we've had worse opening days, you know, in the fog and some of the other circumstances recently. Cody, tomorrow doesn't look bad.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit cool, but I'm optimistic. I'd rather have it be cool than hot and foggy. And definitely, you know, I guess some of the last words too, I really want to thank you and for all the work and the support that you've been with the Warden Force. I know you've been doing this for a lot of years. I think Mike Nice said he 1994 is when he started here, and you've been doing it before him. So we appreciate this morning show. In those years, we were able to answer a lot of questions. So definitely thank you for the work and having us on.
Well, you're welcome. It's been our privilege, and it is today, and I hope it will be in the future. So best wishes. Have a great season. Our thanks to Mike Williams and Cody Adams for being our guests on the morning show. To you for listening, best wishes as you head out for Wisconsin's 9-day gun deer season.